This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Bigfoot Collectors Club presents
Terrifying Tales from Zombie Bigfoot's Cryptid Crypt. I know a ghost story about you.
Well, hello everybody and welcome everyone to Bigfoot Collectors Club, the show where we talk to amazing guests about their personal paranormal history and share stories of high strangeness. I'm your host, Michael McMillan. With me always is your other host,
Bryce Johnson.
And not with us tonight, super producer Riley Bray is missing from this record. He's so sorry he had to miss this one, kids. I'm living in a broken home right now, a broken clubhouse. I got Riley last week, no Bryce. I got Bryce this week, no Riley. I'm an orphan. I have two beds now. I have two bathrooms, two backyards. Aww. No, it's fine. Everybody's fine. Riley just he's playing a show. Spindrift had a gig and we got a record. We wish him well and we're sorry that we're missing that show. We're happy that he's playing.
Speaking of which, I've been so vibing out on Spindrift, like a Spotify playlist. They're such a mood. If you guys haven't checked out Spindrift yet and their music, give them a listen. Check them out. It's like a cool Western Tarantino vibe. Very cool stuff.
Yeah, not the sparkling water, okay, guys? Not the fizzy drink. We were not talking about that. We're talking about Riley's band, Spindrift. What does he call it? I almost said trip-hop Western, but I don't think that's correct. Psychedelic Western.
Yeah, which is way cooler.
Yep. That's the one. Well, as you guys heard from the intro music, it's October. It's officially the spooky season, which is a thing that everyone just decided we're saying now. And therefore, we are returning to Zombie Bigfoot's Cryptid Crypt. All month long, we will be sharing extra scary stories of high strangeness here on the main feed and over on the Patreon, BCC The Other Side. And what better way to celebrate than by picking up Tyler Bentz's perennial Zombie Bigfoot t-shirt or sticker or mug. If you haven't done so already, over on the Campfire Shop, go to wearecampfire.media. Slap that shop button. You can also find the link in our bios on Instagram at Bigfoot Collectors Club and on Twitter at Bigfoot Pod.
Yeah, I got to get me another black hoodie with that design on it. Mine is worn the fudge out, dude. I love that hoodie.
Here's a tip you're probably doing. Bryce, correct me if I'm wrong. I've noticed some other people doing it. Don't put those shirts in the dryer, guys. It's gonna ruin the art. You gotta dry those t-shirts. Yeah, you gotta line dry those. It's gonna wear right off. I line dry all my tees, whether they're from TeePublic, Bigfoot Collectors Club shop or not. A little tip, just in general, line dry your t-shirts, guys. Hot tip from McMills. Bryce, I don't know about you. I'm really in the mood for Halloween this year. I don't know I don't know if like last year was just like a bummer, but like I want to watch horror movies. I want to get spooky. I am into like reading some ghost stories. I'm into it.
100%. Yeah. I love this season more than anything, dude. Like I think a couple years ago, it was on this podcast that like Halloween sort of moved into a nice first place over Christmas, I think. I don't know. I just fucking dig it from head to toe.
It's low stress. Kids, your kids, you got kids at the age where it's really fun. They can do some fun costumes. You know what I mean? I just want to watch horror movies. That's all I want to do. I've been watching Midnight Mass on Netflix, which I don't know if you've checked out yet or not, but it's fucking chef's kiss. Mike Flanagan, who did The Haunting of Hill House, Haunting of Bly Manor, Ouija, Origin of Evil, Oculus, really outdoing himself with this new limited series. Club Scouts, get on this. There is some like high strangeness vibes in this. You guys need to check out Midnight Mass on Netflix. All right, we got to bring in our guest, but before we do that, it's time for a little clubhouse keeping. I wanted to give our trusty Club Scouts a little heads up. You know, we got a lot to look forward to in October, but I wanted to let you guys know that for the first time ever in 4 years, we're going to be taking kind of a hiatus in November and December. Oh, I know. It's a bummer. It sucks. Multiple reasons for this. Getting caught up on some research coming down the line. Got some extra work going on. Need a little bit of a break, but fret not. Because even in November and December, even though the main show is going to be, you know, not every week, you're still going to get something every Wednesday, okay? We're talking Patreon drops, unlocking episodes on the Patreon. We're talking maybe some classic episodes, some possible live shows. You know we're going to give you that jet ski special.
That's coming big time.
Probably doing another live stream show in there, so we won't be gone completely, but I just wanted to give you guys a little heads up. We're taking a hiatus November and December. Once those holidays are over and it's January, we will be back. They're going to be fun drops during this period, so please keep subscribing on your favorite podcast app. And also, the Patreon, the other side, will continue uninterrupted as scheduled. So our Patreons, say it, Bryce.
We'll be getting new our Patreons.
Yes,
we'll be getting new episodes every week.
Yeah, well, 3 to 5 bonus episodes as typical.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
Maybe not every week, but you know, you're still gonna get your fix. So, that's it. Just wanted to give you guys a heads up. We'll remind you when we get to the end of this month that that's happening. But we love you guys. Just taking a little break, and we'll be back in January 2020. In the meantime, you can support the show by subscribing to the podcast if you aren't already doing so, and giving us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast app, like this one that Bryce is going to read for you right now.
Late to the party, says Smanahat A. 5 stars. I'm late to the party, but as a mom, I can confirm moms love Bryce.
Yes.
Aww.
Parental love coming in all forms. Bryce, you weren't here last week. We found out that stepdads also love you and that moms also love Riley.
Oh, good. Okay, great. I love stepdads and moms. So far,
just like in the household I grew up in, no confirmation that I'm loved. But that's fine. It's fine. It's going to be okay. Our guest today is a host and TV personality best known for the podcast Monsters Among Us and Travel Channel's Paranormal Caught on Camera. Club
show.
Scouts of all timelines. Yes, it is. It's Bryce's favorite show. He talks about it literally more than he talks about this podcast. Please welcome to the show, Derek Hayes.
Woo! Gentlemen, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Oh, Derek, we are so excited to have you here. I recently did an episode over on your Patreon, which, heads up, will be a shared exclusive dropping this Friday on BCC The Other Side. So
awesome.
If you're not a subscriber there, check it out over here and then maybe go support Monsters Among Us. But Derek, business aside, welcome to the show. You are the guy. Like, you are getting firsthand witness stories, on a weekly basis now?
Oh,
for
on
how many
an hourly
years?
Basis, I would say, at this point.
Wow.
Essentially, I have a hotline set up, and I have it on my cell phone like an idiot. And my phone's just constantly going off. And I don't even, if you call me, good luck, because it's just a hotline going off constantly.
You're just answering it. Yeah. You need a separate line. You need a dedicated line.
Then I can't see them come in, and it's kind of the excitement. Like, what's on the hook this time? And it's always something different every time.
So tell us a little bit about the podcast, how it works, and how we didn't rip it off.
Sure. I'm ripping somebody off. That's how entertainment works, isn't it? Essentially what it is, it's a call-in show, but it's a little bit different. You call in and leave a voicemail. You leave your story in a form of a voicemail. I take it through and edit it, clean it up, make it sound nice and pretty, and we put it on the air for people to hear. And then we have a conversation about what it might have been, other occurrences in the past that, line up with this, or current news stories, something like that, that may connect the story somehow. So we kind of dive in all different levels, and that's TV shows, it's other podcasts, it's YouTube channels, basically anywhere there's paranormal content, I dig into it and try to find it and bring it to the forefront.
Wow.
So
wow.
As we ask all of our guests, I mean, we should just get right into it here.
Yeah, let's jump in.
What is your personal paranormal history? How did you get into this?
Well, I think a lot like you, actually, Michael, and I don't know how you got into it necessarily, Bryce, but Daniel Cohen was a big one. The Time Life book series, the Reader's Digest book series, and of course, Unsolved Mysteries. There's a few other shows, Sightings, Scariest Places on Earth, I think was an early 90s one. Mm-hmm. Just stuff like that. And I just couldn't get enough. And, once I hit that section in the library, middle school or something, and they had like four or five Bigfoot books, that was just the end right there. But as far as personal experiences, something kind of spurred that on when I was really young. I grew up in Southeast Ohio. If you're familiar with the area, it's about halfway between Pittsburgh and Columbus. And it's just like Appalachia through that area. It's the foothills of the Appalachian Mountains. We lived on a former farm. It used to be a farm. We had 13 acres, my dad. Well, he still has it, actually. And when we were really little, my brother, my friend, and I, we would we called it sightseeing, where we'd pack a lunch in our backpack and we'd go into the woods. It was the 80s. You could do whatever you wanted. And we would go back in there and just have our lunch and just kind of look around this acreage that people really haven't been on for a long time. And while we were back there, we set our packs out on this big rock and we're just kind of talking. And all of a sudden we hear some brush popping up on the hillside. And we kind of look up there and we're 8-10 years old. We're not very old, so we don't really know what to expect. And suddenly here comes this black panther charging through the wood line.
Wow.
I mean, as like something straight out of a zoo. And, mind you, this is Ohio. Mountain lions don't even live in Ohio.
I was going to say, for our listeners, black panthers aren't supposed to exist in Ohio.
Yeah. Well, they're not supposed to exist anywhere in the U.S. unless you look at, like
that
a black
too.
Jaguar in southern Arizona or something specific like that. But so there it was, plain as day, huge, very muscular. This thing was bigger than any dog I've ever seen, lower to the ground, lower profile. But the thing that really caught us off guard, I guess, was the tail. And, again, this was 30 years ago at this point, probably even more than that, honestly. And the memory is a little foggy. It's not what it used to be, but I recall this long, slender tail and this thing just taking off. And ironically, it was headed toward a pipeline that cut through our property where they'd run a natural gas line, I believe it was. Hmm. So essentially it was like a ribbon of field that's maybe 100 feet wide that cut all the way through this forested area. And it went as far as you could walk miles and miles in each direction on this right away pipeline. So anyway, we tried to cut it off. So we ran towards that pipeline because that's where it was headed. And we thought, well, we'll get a plain view of this thing, out in this field. And we only had to run 20 feet and this thing had to go 200, 300 feet. And it still beat us. It was that fast. So whatever this thing was, it scared the hell out of us. We took off back to the house and my dad just happened to be coming home from work around the same time. And this is kind of the classic line in the typical style of my dad. He's like, oh yeah, I saw that thing last week. And that was confirmation for us. He saw it. Apparently he went down to the neighbor's pond and back in the day, I don't think he does this anymore, but back in the day he used to shoot groundhogs. Because they would tear up the fields. And so when you're trying to mow, your tractor would get stuck down in a groundhog hole and stuff. So maybe signs of a serial killer. I don't know what that is specifically. But anyway, he was back in there and he went to the pond. And sure enough, this animal, whatever this thing was drinking at the pond. And he had it through the scope on the gun. He said he didn't know why he didn't fire. I'm glad he didn't. But I would love to know what it was, granted. But he doesn't know why he didn't fire. He looked at it. He, remembered that it was there and didn't say anything to us for some reason. And then the craziest part is he let us go down into the woods after that, knowing that thing was down there. So parent of the year right there.
Right.
But that was one of my first experiences that kind of got me into the cryptid side of things pretty quickly. Once that gateway opens, it's like marijuana and heroin, I think. You get started and you just take off.
Totally. And Derek, what do you guys, what does your family think that was? Was that just a cryptid, an unconfirmed flesh and blood big cat of the upper northeast region?
Well, you know, it's weird because there's a lot of stories from that area. And when I started doing my podcast, I started hitting up family members. And my brother, he's retired now, but he was a cop in my hometown for a long time. He was chief of police for a long time in my hometown, which is 1,500 people, something like that.
Wow.
And he had seen that thing twice while on patrol. And this was maybe 15 miles, 12 miles from the sighting where I saw it. And he's talked to other people that have seen similar things in that area. But if you really take a bird's eye view of it, that entire region just seems to be covered with these things, whatever they are. You know, Pennsylvania, New York, West Virginia, Kentucky, Indiana, especially Ohio. Like, that whole region there seems to really harbor something hidden there. I don't know what it is. My guess is a large cat of some kind, but I just don't know how it's possible.
Go ahead, Bryce.
I was just going to say, the big black cat thing is a phenomenon that we really haven't, you know, like, dived into too much on this podcast at all. You know, I think, like, Linda Godfrey, last time she was on the show, which has been over a year now, was, like, working on a documentary about big cats. You know, I don't know if it's because it's not a Thunderbird or Bigfoot. I've always sort of shrugged at that and gone, yeah, okay, well, there's either a panther that lives down there that we don't know about, or, you know, someone's exotic pets got out and mated, and now they've populated the area. Why is it, and I don't know if you know the answer to this, Bryce or Derek, but, like, why is it a big deal? I'm, like, playing the, like, what is it, just because, like, panthers aren't supposed to exist in the U.S.?
Well, it falls under the category of out-of-place animals. Ohio is full of these things. There's the phantom kangaroos of the western side of Ohio. Cleveland, there was the peninsula python that people saw. It was like a 40 or 50-foot python people saw for years in the late 1800s. So these aren't animals that shouldn't exist. They're animals that shouldn't exist here. So that makes them kind of strange. And, of course, I think there's a bit of danger knowing that there's some sort of apex predator loose in the area.
Absolutely.
To tie all this in a little bit, I don't know if you guys remember this. I think it was 2011. I've already was living in LA for a long time by this point, but in Zanesville, Ohio, which was right down the road, that's where we went to the big stores.
Named after Billy Zane, right?
Exactly. Yes. After his big hit in Back to the Future, they kind of renamed the town. Actually, that's named after Zane Trace, who is an explorer that kind of built a road from the East Coast into the wilds of Ohio and Kentucky. And the road that went through there, which is now I-70, was Zane's Trace back in the day. And then Zane Grey, ironically, was born in that town. So
that's amazing. Amazing.
Weird coincidences. Anyway, I'm off topic here. Where was I?
Out of place. Thing about Billy Zane.
Zanesville, it's called the Zanesville Massacre. Now, essentially what took place is there was this guy that had a private zoo, essentially. He had dozens of tigers, lions, he had a few bears, a lot of exotic animals, and he decided he was done. He opened every single cage, let every single one of them out, and then took his own life. So this town of Zanesville, which I think is about 40,000 people, completely shut down. They just shut everything down because there was 30 tigers on the loose. There was 20 lions on the loose, a few mountain lions.
I remember this. When this was, like, more recent, right?
Yeah, 2011, I think. I think that's about when it was. But like I said, my brother was in law enforcement, so he had a lot of insight of what was going on there. And it's just a tragic event. But that was 20 miles from my sighting. So I'm not saying they're correlated, but
yeah. I was going to ask, do you think a lot of those released cats could have multiplied and grown in number?
Did they kill
most of them?
Yeah, according to local officials, they killed every one of them. Yeah, the only thing that was still outstanding was a monkey of some sort, and I don't know which species of monkey it was. And they think that one of the tigers probably ate it.
Right, right.
I think he head down to Kentucky, Bryce, built himself a little nest out there in the Blue Hills.
God. this black cat thing is just so reminiscent to me of the Bigfoot phenomenon. You have people. Families, reliable eyewitnesses saying they saw something. They know what they saw. They can describe it. Multiple witnesses seeing the same thing. But then they're not supposed to exist. Like the Bureau of Land Management, Fish and Wildlife say, no, 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 that's not right, because they don't exist up here. They, you know, there are no mountain lions in Ohio, especially large black panthers or jaguars or black cats. They don't exist. And so you're going, well, wait a minute. So what is it? And it's the same thing with Bigfoot, right? It's like people see them, multiple witnesses see them, but then, you know, I guess Bigfoot's a little stranger because, you know, there are no sort of upright walking large primates besides us that exist out there. We know large cats exist, but it just, I don't know. I think it's somehow connected. I don't know. Interdimensional mountain cat. Definitely.
Well, you know, like I said, it was a gateway. It really got me into a lot of this stuff. And, you know, I went on to have other experiences in my life. I had, you know, ghost experience and stuff like that. But that was kind of the thing that got me going. I was, if this is possible, what else is out there? You know, it just kind of got the gears going that, you know, if I can see this in my own yard, what the hell else is out there, you know?
Two things. I can't believe we scooted right past Phantom Kangaroo. And I, without A, talking about it, and B, Bryce saying this is going to go on the track list for BJ and the Shadow Bats, just saying that. And then second, what's your ghost story? It's Halloween. It's zombie Bigfoot's cryptid crypt season. Let's hear that spooky old ghost story.
Well, this one, I can't get this one out of my head. I've been thinking about it. It happened... I was probably 12 or 13, maybe 14. You know, I was an early teenager. My grandparents had moved from Ohio to Jacksonville, Florida, and they bought a little trailer in a trailer court, and that's where they retired. And we went to visit them one time. I don't know what time of year it was. It probably doesn't even matter, but it was kind of a packed house. You know, they had a small house trailer, and my family of five and then my grandparents, and there was probably a dog there somewhere. A lot of us were sleeping on the floor. That's the point I'm getting at. So I'll back up a little bit. The day I got there, I would walk down the hallway to the bathroom, and you'd have to pass by a bedroom, just like an open doorway to a room that had like a ceiling fan, like a big lacy curtain, and a futon table or daybed or a futon couch or a daybed, something like that. So every single time I would walk by, out of my peripheral vision, I would see a Native American in full headdress. Like this guy looked amazing. Just dancing his ass off, his arms just a flailing, his legs kicking up and down. And I would see it out of my peripheral. The second I would turn my head, gone, completely gone. And there's nothing there that I could mistake it for. So this happened two or three times. I started telling my family about it. I'm like, you know, I keep seeing something here, and they all think I'm batshit crazy. That night, I guess it was probably our final night, and I've already seen this thing three, four times and been telling them about it. We were all like lounged around the house. It was probably 3-4 in the morning. And something came running down the roof of the trailer and came to the end and came running back. My dad said sounded like a person, two legs, just running back and forth on the roof of the camper. So of course everybody gets up, but we're kids. So I slept through this part, believe it or not. So he gets up and my grandparents get up. My mom gets up, and then the pounding's on the side of the camper. Or I keep calling it a camper, but it was a trailer. It's like 50 feet long. It's a house, essentially. So something's running around slapping on the sides of it. And we're in the middle of town. I mean, there's other houses, you know, within 30, 40 feet of us. So it's not exactly a place where people could hide. So they all jump out, look out the windows. There's absolutely nothing out there. They don't find a source for this sound whatsoever. But I can't help but tie that all in my head somehow, that the Native American that I kept seeing was somehow responsible for those sounds. Cause it was the only time that there was any activity, according to my grandparents. I'd visited there several times and never experienced anything other than that one single time. And, you know, knowing the land where they live, it just looked prime for, like, I could just picture a village being there. There was like a creek and a river close by.
Yeah.
It was just a beautiful plot of land. It, of course, it had trailers all over it, so it wasn't as beautiful as it used to be, but I just couldn't help but imagine this maybe some sort of village or something like that. And there's some sort of residual energy that's just going to town in this camper. And I just happened to be there at the right place in the right time.
So you're thinking more window to the past, time loop kind of thing than possible visitation.
Well, you know, when you say it out loud like that, I start to question it, because seeing the apparition is one thing. That could easily be something residual or replaying.
Easily.
But pounding on the trailer itself, running on the roof of the trailer itself,
yeah,
that's obviously something a little more interactive. So now that you say that in retrospect, maybe I'm wrong. I mean, that's the thing about this stuff. We're wrong all the time. So.
Well, you know, I don't think it has to be an either or type of thing, right? Perhaps it's a little bit of both. Perhaps it's yeah, it's an entity, a sentient entity, or some type of energy that is able to sort of pick up on the residual energy and project it as what's already been recorded there, whether in the rocks or in the stream. And so perhaps it's a little bit of both, you know?
Yeah. Who knows, right?
I mean, I feel like I say this a lot, like nothing scares me more, but like, honestly, the thought of the running of footsteps on roof is one of the scariest things ever. So I went to a, our listeners know this who've been sticking around for a long time. I went to finish high school at a arts academy up in Michigan called Interlochen. And we were out in the middle of the woods. There were some haunted stories. I saw a ghost out there. Story for another time and in a previous episode. But they would talk about, I'd hear stories that when, excuse me, when everyone would camp, you know, pack up and go home for the year, and the residence hall directors and counselors, who were all grown-ups, were like cleaning out the dorms, getting, you know, they stuck around for another weekend and shut down the campus. There were stories that they would tell me that once the dorms were empty, they would suddenly hear footsteps of people running up and down the empty hallways. Wow. on the second floor. There's only two floors in these dorms. And they would just sit and listen as they heard the footsteps go boom, 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 you know, from one end of the hall. These dorms were just shaped like, you know, shoe boxes with like one long hall going down, you know, two different wings and upstairs. And they would just hear footsteps running back and forth, and there would be nobody up there. What are these ghosts doing?
You know, it's funny you mentioned that it was an old dormitory. I have this theory that there are certain types of buildings, hospitals, jails, churches, schools, places like that with a lot of energy going in, a lot of energy mm-hmm. going out. They just hold that energy somehow. I don't have a clue how it happens. I'm certainly not smart enough to figure that out. But it just seems like something seeps into the foundation of the building or the air around it, something. And it just seems to be those kinds of buildings that hold that stuff.
I also like the idea that that homes themselves or how structures themselves have a spirit. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like that there's a ghost for every building, you know, that's sort of the inhabitant, the like spirit of the building itself, you know, that might be a little personified. And it would be fun to think that like that dorm is like, oh, I got it. I finally have some alone time. And they're like running freely down the halls, you know?
Yeah. I mean, who knows? Who effing knows? I like that. That's an interesting concept or idea, sort of inanimate consciousness, you know? Yeah. It's pretty wild.
Yeah. Or the more life that's in there just feeds the soul of the house, and the house itself starts to take on a spiritual form. You know, mm-hmm. it's kind of like mm-hmm. in Harry Potter when the Weasleys, you know, they have a ghoul living in their attic, and it's like, yep, that's the ghost that lives here. You know,
right.
Maybe not quite literally the same thing, but I like the idea that every building has a spirit, every structure has its own ghost. What do you think, Derek? What do you think about ghosts in general? Are they souls of the dead? Are they what Bryce said, maybe a little from column A, a little from column B? Where do you fall? You've been listening to these stories now for so long. Where do you fall on the ghost fence? Which side of the fence?
Well, I'm not afraid to say that I'm a hopeful skeptic. I'm very skeptical of all of these things. Show me some proof. My belief wanes and waxes. It it grows and shrinks. It depends on what the subject is and what I've read about recently, but there's been a few ghost stories that have come in that have really made me change my mind about what I thought ghosts might be. For a long time, I just thought it was some sort of stagnant energy, or just, you know, energy that's stuck or somehow attracted to a certain place, thing, person, possibly. And when I say energy, I mean almost literally like you could power your car with it kind of energy. Not that strength. Again, I'm not a scientist, so I'm just throwing shit out here. See what
sticks
at the wall.
We gotta harness this ghost power for our ghost mobiles, guys. Let's get on this.
But there's, you know what I mean, though. There's just some sort of, we have energy, right? Each one of us living souls have an energy of some sort.
Yeah, and we're electrical beings. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And when we die, that energy has to go somewhere. It doesn't just end. It dissipates, perhaps, or it gets absorbed into other things, but it's still there. That energy has to go somewhere. So that's kind of the energy I'm talking about, I guess. But I always thought it wasn't as conscious as we originally thought, or as a lot of people think. You know, you chain rattling and chasing people out of places. I just thought it was just kind of mostly residual. Almost everything you would see would just be some sort of residual, like a tape playing back. But a couple calls I got, one was, it was a man driving his son home from something, and his son was 2 or 3 years old, just learning how to talk. And he was in the backseat behind him, and they were driving by a cemetery, and the kid just belts out, "Look at all those people." And he points at the cemetery. And the dad looks up and it's just a field, because not only is it, you know, an empty cemetery, there's no people up there, but the stones are the flush stones. I'm sure you've seen a cemetery where the stones don't protrude out of the ground. They're flat. So you can't really tell what you're even looking at from certain angles. And he claimed that was that kind of cemetery. So he starts probing the kid. He's like, "Well, what do you see?" And he's like, "Oh, they're just standing around. They look sad. There's a lot of grandmas." And I got cold chills when that guy repeated that. Just imagining this kid coming up with all this information, a lot of grandma. Of course, there's going to be a lot of old people in a cemetery. It was just weird, a weird coincidence. And the other story that really made me think about it was, I think this was in, the first one was in Ohio, I believe. The other one was in Washington State, I want to say. This woman was driving to work, and there was a really bad accident right ahead of her. And one of the women driving in the vehicle was killed in the accident. So she's driving through, and as she's driving through the accident, suddenly she looks over and there's just a woman sitting in her passenger seat. And the woman looks just as shocked as she is, you know, to see somebody there. So they kind of strike up a conversation. She's like, "What the hell are you doing here?" You know? And she's like, "I'm confused. I don't know what's happening." And the living driver, she goes, "Well, I think you were just in an accident. I think you've passed away." And she said the woman's face just looked like, well, like you would expect it to look when you hear that kind of news. And all of a sudden in front of the vehicle, she said it was just a bright light that opened up and she just went toward it and gone from the vehicle. And the way both of these people told these stories, I listened to a lot of stories and I can suss out a liar in seconds. I don't think either of these people were lying. And those two stories just changed the way I feel about ghostly encounters. I don't have answers, but it just kind of changes the way I feel. And I think those kind of things are much more rare than we think they are. I think a lot of everyday normal happenings, I guess, are mistaken for ghostly activity. You know, pipes banging inside your wall. Of course, somebody's knocking on the wall, right? That kind of stuff gets mistaken a lot. But the true paranormal stuff, I think, is a lot more rare. And I think you have to be a certain type of person to experience it. And I always say, especially on my show, that the people that experience stuff like this are people that are paying attention. They're people that are always looking, like UFOs. You got to be looking up. You're never going to see it. You know, if ghosts, you got to be exploring. You got to be going places that you would experience this kind of thing. It has to be somebody that's right place, right time, but also paying attention and aware of what's happening. You could be at Walmart and see a ghost. You never know. I don't know if that answered any questions whatsoever. It's, that was a long ramble.
100% did, man. I got chills thinking about that. When you were telling that story of just that lady who ended up in the passenger seat, like, what am I doing? Like, just so confused upon her death that just probably happened so suddenly, you know? Mm-hmm. So incredible. Oh,
I felt so bad, too. I mean, it just, it touches you in a human way, too. You know, we're all alive. You know, we could all die at any minute. So when you hear a story like that, it's kind of like, I'm not a religious guy whatsoever. I didn't grow up religious or anything like that. So I guess in my mind, once you're dead, you're dead. The lights are out. It's over. But when you hear stuff like that, it kind of gives you that sliver of hope, you know, like, well, maybe there is something going on the other side.
Oh, I 100% think there's something that goes on after we die. Just nobody knows exactly for sure what it is, but we'll all know one day, you know. What a trip.
Well, man. As I joke on my show, everybody's going to find out at one point. Yeah, you're exactly
yeah.
right.
Yep.
I also just, that's the first story made me think, okay, I will not be buried in a cemetery. I do not want to hang out with a bunch of sad old people for the rest of my life, my afterlife. No, thank you.
Yeah. Cremation is looking a little better these days, huh?
Yeah. Sprinkle me in the ocean. Let me hang out with some blowfish.
You're thinking about it all wrong, though. You got to pick a cemetery with a lot of action. I mean, you're from Kansas. What, Stull Cemetery probably would be a good one for you?
Oh, boy. It's funny that you mentioned that, because we just talked about that. When this episode drops, we will have just talked about Stull on the Patreon. So everybody go check that out. Not far from where I grew up. Yeah. Creepy stuff. All right, Derek, we got to play the game that we play with all of our guests. And you are no exception. And of course, we've tweaked it a little bit for Halloween. It's the return of the Halloween version of the game that we love to call, because that's its name, Bullshit
or Believe It.
Now, Derek, I feel like you're familiar with the show from what we've said.
I am, yeah.
I don't need to explain to you, but for the listeners, I'm going to go down a list of phenomena. I'm going to do it rapid fire style. And if you are open to something, you're going to say believe it. If you're not open to something, you're going to say bullshit. There's no in between. You got to pick it in the moment. And we can always circle back and talk about stuff that you're a little on the fence of. Okay, here we go. Derek Hayes, on your mark. Get set. Ghosts.
Believe it.
UFOs.
Believe it.
Bigfoot.
Bullshit.
Vampires.
I don't like that taste. Bullshit. Sorry.
Shadow Michael. People. Shadow. I don't apologize to me. Shadow people.
You know, I'm going to believe it for today.
Derek, I need you to be honest with us, okay? You stay true to yourself in this game.
Oh, I'm 100% true. Like I told you, it waxes and wanes. And today, you know, I just heard a story yesterday that's going to be on my show tomorrow that kind of changed my mind on that, actually.
Okay, Loch Ness Monster.
Bullshit.
Alien Greys.
Believe it.
Werewolves.
Bullshit.
Parallel Universes.
Believe it.
Zombies.
Believe it.
Shapeshifters.
Bullshit.
Heaven.
Bullshit.
Hell.
Bullshit.
Yeti.
Believe it. Asterix.
Astrology.
Bullshit.
ESP.
Believe it.
Witches.
Believe it.
Demons.
Bullshit.
Atlantis.
Bullshit.
Mothman.
I believe it.
The Jersey Devil.
Bullshit.
The Biblical Devil.
Bullshit.
Life on other planets.
Believe it.
Life after death.
Ironic, isn't it? I'm going to believe it for today.
I think there can be life after death and not be ghosts. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think that's true. Yeah, reincarnation could be.
Yeah, reincarnation's one. Just piecing out to another dimension and not coming back here is fine too, you know?
How do you do that, Michael? Do you have directions?
I don't know.
Not that I'm in a hurry or anything. That just sounds like a wild ride.
As soon as I find out, I will try to tell you. once I'm on the other side.
Derek,
so,
I'm coming after you. Zombies over Bigfoot? What's up, man?
Well, you know.
No, bro.
Are we done with the game? Was that the final one?
That was it. Sorry. Okay. Yes. Congratulations. You won. You upset Bryce.
Well, okay. Let me explain myself, Bryce. The Bigfoot thing, I go back and forth so much on that. I'll look at the Patterson-Gimlin film one time and say, well, obviously that's a guy in a suit. There's no doubt in my mind. I'll look at it a week later from a different scan or whatever. I think, oh, wait a minute. What's this bulge here? What's that thing there? And it's the same thing with all these reports.
We all know what the bulge is.
There is no bulge. It's only pendulous breasts. Come on.
Well, there's that hip muscle that could be a wrinkle in a suit. Could be the wrinkle of the whatever that muscle is called that I can't recall off the top of my head. So when it comes to Bigfoot, you know, there's so much noise and I'm trying to like weed out stuff. And somebody said something once that really made me think, and this is why I still kind of stay on the fence with Bigfoot, because logically it's impossible, at least in my head. It doesn't seem possible. But somebody said, and I can't remember who it was, so I can't credit them here, but essentially they said, you know, take a human being and get rid of the technology, like all the stuff that we work toward, right? Same brain or similar brain. Instead of trying to build things or go to work or create art or stuff, you just focus on hiding and surviving, and that's literally it. That's the only thing you worry about. And how good could you be at that? And how easily you could stay undetected if you were in that mindset and you did have those abilities. And I'm not describing it very eloquently.
Who said this to you, by the way? Like a very cool grandpa?
It was a YouTuber, I'm pretty sure, because I watch a ton of content, obviously for the show. So somebody had said it at some point, and it just it's changing a way of thinking. I think is the way to get around a lot of this.
No, I like
as we've established on the show.
As
we've established on the show, you know, Riley loves moms, Michael loves grandpas. I just wanted to say that. Anyway, go on. Sorry, Bryce.
You'll find your group, Michael, eventually. Yeah, somebody
trying to find it.
No, I mean, I totally get what this guy's saying. I mean, it's sort of a take on the stoned ape theory, right? If you're out there and you're just focused on, you know, shunning society, shunning technology, and just developing your own inner abilities, and who knows, maybe even taking mushrooms and talking to the plants, and just being one with nature. Who only knows the possibilities of what they're capable of.
God only knows the possibilities for Bigfoot. Zombies.
Well,
no judgment.
Haitian zombies is what I was thinking. You know, there's the story. Man, I can't think of this guy's name. It'll come to me as soon as we hang up here. But it happened in like the 60s or something. But he died. Right? He was in the hospital. They did all the tests. They buried him. And 30 years later, his sister sees him at a market and they recognize each other. They have a conversation. Turns out he was zombified or whatever, put in the coffin, dug up a day later, and basically forced to work. He was a slave for 30 years. And finally, the guy that did it died and he was freed and he went on about his business. And I'm pretty sure that was featured in the book and film Serpent in the Rainbow, if you guys are familiar with that.
Yes. I got to go
back. Based on a true story. I don't know how true any of this stuff is, when, you know, especially when it says based on a true story, your red flag usually go up. But and so the stuff like that, I'm thinking, well, they were using ingredients like the puffer fish was one of the ingredients, like the toxin from a puffer fish.
Yeah.
And of course, if they do studies on that stuff, you know, there's neurological effects to all these toxins, these poisons that could put you in a temporary coma, could give you the effects that were described.
This is Romeo and Juliet, zombies, man. This is go to an eternal sleep and wake up later, you know, with the antidote. Yeah. I think there is the rare medical case where people have been buried alive and they're not actually dead, or their heart starts back up out of nowhere. It's strange. And technically, sure. You know what? If you crawl up out of your coffin and up through the fucking muddy floor, hey, zombie, you got it.
You've earned the title, zombie. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Derek Hayes is going to share some of his spookiest stories as we unearth the contents of Zombie Bigfoot's cryptid crypt. Okay, we're kicking off Zombie Bigfoot's Cryptid Crypt for the Halloween season here on Bigfoot Collectors Club with Derek Hayes. Now, instead, in lieu of your traditional story of high strangeness this week on the show, we've asked Derek, who's now an archivist of the strange,
to
unearth some of his weirder, spookier stories, some of his favorites. to get us all in the fucking mood. All right. Are you ready for this? Derek, why don't you take us away? You brought in three stories that we're going to hear, and these are calls that you got on your hotline.
That's right.
Walk us through each one. I'm going to hand the I would say baton, but it's the skeleton bone. I'm going to hand it over to you.
Well, this first one actually goes all the way back to my first season back in spring of 2016. When I first started out, I wasn't that popular, believe it or not, and I had to beg people I knew to tell stories. And my buddy Matt from college told me this story years ago in the dorms, fraternity house somewhere. And essentially, I love the story. And I said, I called him up and I said, you got to share this story for me. Just call it in. So he calls it in. And this is Matt's story from Ohio. And when it's over, I'll tell you the significance of it. But this is one of the most popular calls to ever be played on any of my episodes.
Hmm.
All right, let's take it away. Here's Matt's story. Matt from college's story.
Hey, just want to tell you thanks first and foremost for letting me tell the story here. Forgive me, a few of the details are a little bit fuzzy. About 20 years ago, a little over 20 years ago. However, what I did see still sticks with me, and it still kind of freaks me out to this day. So like I said, this was about 20, maybe even 21 years ago. I wasn't even quite yet a teenager. We had just moved, my family had just moved from our old house to a brand new house. It was just built. But the development itself was still very incomplete. A lot of dirt lots, you know, basements already kind of dug out, construction stuff all over the place, and kind of like that. Definitely a safe place for a young kid to go run around and be an idiot in. Anyway, this would have been maybe after our first full year in the house of, it must have been early summer, maybe even late spring. I just remember it was warm out. I was dead asleep in my room. But, like, just suddenly I had, like, this urge. I felt, like, very compelled to wake up. Not, like, in a jumpy sort of way, like something startled me, but just I was just very alert and very awake. And this is a little bit after 2 a.m. And I also felt compelled to go walk over to one of my bedroom windows. So I walked over and I sort of crouched down so I could see. I don't know why I crouched down, but I crouched down so I could kind of see out the window a little bit better. There were some trees in our front yard. They're probably gone now, but there's some trees in our front yard that blocked my view a little bit, but you could still kind of see all the way down to the corner down the street. Probably can't now. There's obviously, like I said, this was a new development at the time. There weren't many houses then, but now your view would probably be blocked from the same window. So anyway, as I'm peering down, looking at this corner, I see three figures walking away from my house. They're maybe 200 to 300 feet away, somewhere in that range, and kind of moving, like I said, moving away from the house. So I'm watching them for a long moment, and I don't know why. Like I just woke up and felt compelled to kind of go over the window and take a peek out. And as I'm watching these figures, I notice that I just can't glean any detail. I mean, there's even a street light kind of down the street a ways, but it's just like it's not enough light for me to make out exactly who or what was walking down the street. But I could see the more or less the dark outlines of like people. But it was really strange. As I was watching them, I noticed that they were all moving in unison, like almost like perfectly synced together. They're sort of in like a, not quite a straight line, almost like an angled line walking down the, what would become the sidewalk, but it was just kind of like a dirt path at the time. And they were also very, very slow. Even though they were moving kind of constantly, it didn't seem like any of their movements were in any kind of hurry. They just sort of almost like glided down the street. So I'm watching them for a very long moment, and all three of them stop. And I don't know how to explain it. Even though I couldn't really make out any detail, I could tell that they all sort of turned their heads to look at me. There's nothing else on the street. There's no cars, no other people walking around. Like I said, it was new development. There wasn't much really out by where we lived at that point in time. All three of them at the same time, though, like I said, they moved in unison. They craned their heads, at least as far as I could tell, to look at me. And I don't know if you can make eye contact with something that doesn't, you can't really see a face on, but I feel like we made eye contact for a moment. And whatever I was looking at, they knew that I was watching them, and they were watching me there for that long, long moment. All three of the figures turned around, craned their necks around to look at me. And like I said, they all moved in unison so I could kind of see the movements happening at the same time. We had that weird moment where I knew they were watching me and they knew I was watching them. And it was just kind of a weird, kind of tense moment. I didn't know what to do. I just kind of sat there and just kept staring. And then everything just kind of went blank, like not in like a pass out kind of way. I just felt like a very long blink. And when I opened my eyes again, I was still in the same position, kind of kneeling down, looking at the window. My face was like pressed up against the glass of the window. And then instead of 2 a.m., it was just about 9 a.m., maybe just a little bit before 9 a.m. I had blinked and misplaced about 7 hours worth of time. It was in daylight, obviously. There was, you know, weird figures at the end of the street by the corner. Still really freaks me out, actually. You know, 20 years later, like I said, some of the details are maybe a little bit off, and you know, I don't know how far away they were or you know, what time of year it was necessarily, but I still remember that moment when they turned around and looked at me, knowing that I was watching them. Still kind of runs chills up my spine. Anyway, thanks for letting me tell a story. Hopefully, I don't experience anything like that ever again.
Okay.
Wow.
I have some thoughts about this right off the bat, but Derek, why don't you get us into this discussion here?
Sure, sure. So when he called this in, I was grateful because I had content to play, of course. I had no idea the can of worms that I was about to open up. So I played this call, and within, I would say, 3 weeks, I probably got half a dozen other stories identical to this one from all across the United States.
No.
All the same elements. And this has continued on for years. I've probably got, I'd say, close to 24 mentions of these entities. I finally gave them a name because I just got tired of describing them, and I called them the Mirrored Men for obvious reasons. They seem to be mirrored. So essentially,
yeah, like they're moving in unison and mirroring one another.
Exactly. Yeah, they're whatever the first one does, the other two do the identical thing. They already look identical. But these are, they're three figures that move in unison. Like I said, they're identical in appearance.
Is it always three?
It's almost, I had one account of two, which, you know, you could throw that out as a variable or something, but everything else has been three.
Wow.
They show up in a rural area. They show up around odd weather. And there's always missing time involved. And sometimes it's substantial. You know, Matt had, I think he said 8 hours or 6 hours or something.
Yeah, he blinked.
Usually it's a lot of time.
7 hours later, he like blinked his eyes and 7 hours had gone by.
Yeah, dude, there's some shit that went down in those 7 hours. I'm sorry.
Yeah. there's another encounter with these strange beings. I think this was in Iowa. And this gentleman was deer hunting in a deer stand. And he said, you know, the woods was alive. You just hear things. And suddenly he sees these three figures walk past this distant path. And as they walked, just the forest fell silent. You know, all the animals just stopped. And I think if I'm remembering the story right, he may have raised his gun to look at them through the scope. And that's the second he did that, they just all three turned at the same time. And he said the next thing he remembered, he was on the ground. And his gun was shoved into the dirt. And it was dark out. It wasn't dark when he saw these figures. So this thing.
Do they ever describe like sort of what they look like, what they're wearing?
They do. Yeah. Yeah.
It varies a little. Is there a commonality in that? Like, so for example, like the Men in Black, they're usually in dark suits, maybe a hat and, you know, sunglasses. What are these mirrored men usually? What's their vibe?
Well, they're almost always seen in cloaks or robes of some sort, but a few encounters have seen them in like a tweed suit or like a really outdated suit from like the 20s or 30s.
Wow.
Their eyes are always said to be piercing. Matt didn't mention the eyes in this, but he said he got that feeling that they were looking at him, even though he couldn't see the eyes. But everybody else is like, as soon as those eyes hit you, you feel it. You don't even, you know, it's something you feel, physical. Their faces are said to be like exaggerated. Their mouth is really wide, like Mick Jagger,
like,
I guess.
No.
Their nose just looks strange. Their eyes are wide set. They just don't look. A lot of people compare them to frogs, actually. Frog faced.
Wow.
Oh, boy.
Wow.
I love this story.
Yeah.
I have a theory that going on nothing but Matt's story that I wonder if it's not actually multiple entities. But it's one entity and the lens, like it's from a parallel dimension, and the lens through which we're looking at it isn't like fully in focus. So it's like, you know, like
it's when
you
cross your eyes and you get double vision.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So you're getting double or triple vision, but it's just one entity that's not fully formed on our spectrum of sight. That seems to me just as plausible as if it's, you know, if we're going with this three entities that are all moving in unison, that would make more sense to me.
You're in good company, Michael, because a lot of my listeners have called in with similar opinions, similar ideas. They think that this is some sort of multidimensional entity of some sort, and we just simply can't visualize, you know, the dimension that they are, whatever dimension it is. My head isn't programmed to figure a lot of that stuff out. I just kind of start pulling hair out. But you, essentially what you're saying is that we can't see into the dimension, so they're skewed. Like the vision that we see is just messed up. And I think that's as good a theory as anything else. I don't know what these things are.
I want to know what's going on with that missing time, because that's usually relegated to the world of abduction and UFO sightings. I've never heard it with strange phenomena like these mirrored men, or even with men in black. You know, I wonder what happens with, man, I wonder if any of these witnesses have ever thought about getting regressed to see what took place during
that's a good idea.
Missing time, because I wonder if there is some sort of UFO component to it.
Well, once you take the lid off, you can't really put it back on. So I imagine a lot of people are apprehensive. The thing about these sightings, people are shook by them. They're really upset by them. There was another one that actually happened up here. I live in the mountains above L.A. and near Lake Arrowhead, Big Bear, if anyone's familiar. And I got a call a couple years ago. Strawberry Peak, which is up here by, I guess, Twin Peaks is the closest area. It's a bunch of cell phone towers and stuff, but there's a fire tower, and you can actually visit and climb up the fire tower and meet the lookouts and everything. So I guess a group was there, and it gets incredibly foggy up here. You know, we're essentially in the clouds. We're at 5,500 feet. So this group went to the fire tower, and it got dark, and they decided they were all going to walk back to the car, which is like a half a mile, quarter mile walk through this forest down this. It's just a road, and you can see through the forest. It's a big pine tree. So if somebody got lost, they'd be easily found pretty quickly. At any rate, everybody made it to the vehicle except for one girl, and they just waited and waited and waited. And hours later, she finally showed up, and she said, did you guys interact with those people? And they're like, what are you talking about? We just were right ahead of you. There was no people. And she's like, there was three identical people. And they, I'm trying to remember how the story goes. They divert her trail somehow. They make her move somehow. And
I'll tell you how it goes. She went suddenly, bye-bye.
Yeah, probably. She went somewhere, didn't she? And a lot of people try to tie these into the fae and that kind of thing.
Under the lake, to the burrowed man's room.
Yeah.
To the
Derek,
hall
I think it's time you
faithful.
Ask your old buddy Matt for another favor, and that's for a regression session during Sweeps Week.
Oh, sounds like a good Patreon episode, doesn't it?
Yeah, it sure does.
Podcast Sweeps Week. I love it. God, that's so spooky. Mirrored Men. Oh, boy, oh, boy. I wonder what John E.L. Tenney would have to say about that.
Oh, I'd love to know. Yeah.
We'll find out next time he's on the show.
Doesn't hurt
we'll
to ask.
Ask
yeah.
him. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm trying to find as much information as I can. I'm only the messenger here. I can throw out theories all day, but I have no clue what these are. And I'm just lucky enough that I stumbled upon, you know, this thread of sightings.
Man.
Cool name,
fantastic.
Though. Mirrored Men.
The Mirrored Men.
How many people get the name an entity or a cryptid or, you know, whatever, a paranormal thing? Like,
not
it doesn't happen all the time.
You nailed it, guys.
Lauren Coleman gets to do it.
Yeah. Linda S. Godfrey. Listen, if you guys are hearing this episode and you're going, holy shit, I know what he's talking about, please write to us at BigfootCollectorsClub@gmail.com. And we'll talk about it on an L-File story, and we'll even share it with we'll get Derek's opinion. Okay.
Oh, great.
Now, set us up for the next story here.
Well, before we do that, real quick, if you're interested in the Mirrored Men, I have a special episode just on it. It's like 2 hours long. Season 7, episode 15, I believe it is. So if you're interested and you want to learn more, you can go check that out. Shameless plug right there. Sorry, guys.
No.
I love a Mirrored Man special. Are you kidding me?
How about a Bigfoot special? I got a Bigfoot call for you guys.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
So Mickey is a longtime listener of mine. She lives in Oregon. And, let's let her tell the story. But this is her Bigfoot experience in Montana.
Great.
Hi, my name is Mickey. I'm currently living in Springfield, Oregon. I want to tell you something that happened to me when I was a long-haul truck driver. It happened on a night in early March of 2011. I'm a female, and on this trip I was solo. I picked up a load of paper out of Lewiston, Idaho. The daytime temperature that day was only about 15 degrees, and there was a lot of snow. But it had been a couple of days since it snowed, so the roads were mostly clear. I needed to take the load to Billings, Montana. Normally, I'd have gone through on I-90, but I-90 was closed for snow, I guess. I don't know. It was closed for some reason. Another trucker there said, oh, just take US 12 to Montana. It's a good road and it's open. So I looked at it on the map and decided to try it. Once I got loaded, I went to the truck stop because paper's a really heavy load and I had to weigh the truck. And there I took out my trash and got fuel and weighed the truck. And I also bought some hot wings there to eat later. I started along US 12 at about 3 p.m. It's only two lanes and it's pretty windy. And once I got down into the Loxa River Basin, I think I'm pronouncing that right, the temperature gauge read about 5 degrees, and it was definitely colder. Freezing fog had formed, and visibility was getting bad. And on my right was the river. Sometimes my wheels were only 2 feet from the river, and that was kind of scary because it was a really heavy load, and there were cracks on the side of the road, and I was afraid that the whole thing was going to collapse, and I would go into the river, which would have killed me. There was steep mountainsides on both sides of the river, and one was just right next to the other lane of the road going up. And because it was so steep and so far up, I couldn't get any signal at all, not on my phone or on the Qualcomm. And the Qualcomm is it's like a satellite device that trucking companies use to track their trucks. And I had no signal on it, so I knew nobody knew where I was. So that being said, it was getting dangerous to keep going. And the last car had passed me probably an hour before. I was about 30 miles from the last structure I saw, which was a ranger station that was closed. And the road was getting icy, so I needed to pull over. I finally found a little pullout by a boat ramp, and so I pulled out there, and my truck barely fit off the road. But I decided, okay, this is safe. And so I got out and I walked around and checked the truck, and it was covered in ice, so I know it was heavier than when I weighed it. And so I just went in the truck, and I shut the windshield curtains, and then I also shut the curtains to the cab to keep it warmer in there. And I was idling the truck for warm. About 9 p.m., I got up and I looked at the temperature, and it was zero. It said 0 degrees, but it was probably more like minus 10 because I was idling, and the sensor is actually in the engine compartment down near the wheel, but I was idling, so that's keeping the heat in there. So I figured minus 10 maybe. I just laid down to go to sleep right after I checked the temperature, and I heard rustling in the front of the truck, kind of like a plastic or paper rustling, and immediately I began to smell something. I would describe it as a cross between a wet dog, rotting meat, and the worst grocery store dumpster on a hot day you've ever smelled. It was horrible. I got up to look and I sniffed my trash because I couldn't figure out where it was coming from, but that wasn't it. It kept getting stronger and I couldn't figure out where it was coming from. So I sat back down on the bunk, and that kind of shook the truck a little bit because it's air ride. So immediately when I sat down, something hit the side of my truck right where my head was. I mean, it was like 2 inches from my head. It sounded like a rock. I jumped and jerked around and another one hit. And I was sure they were making big dents. When the second one hit, I knew what it was. I guarantee it wasn't a bear out there throwing rocks. And I'm sure a man, to be out there in that weather, he'd have to have so much clothing he couldn't lift his arm. I know it was a Bigfoot or a Sasquatch or whatever else you call them. I really, really wanted to see it. I was kind of excited, but I was also scared that if I put my head in the window, it would break the glass and I would freeze to death because it was so cold that my shampoo bottle that was touching the side of the heated cab was frozen solid. So I just huddled on the bed and it threw 4 more rocks, 6 altogether, and I did count them. Gradually, the smell dwindled away, but it took about 45 minutes because it would get stronger and weaker and stronger and weaker, but he only threw just the 6 rocks. And I could just imagine it out there walking around the cab trying to figure out a way in or to get me to leave or I don't know what he wanted. The next morning, I stayed in the cab with the curtains closed until the first vehicle passed by on the road, probably about 10 a.m. Then I opened the curtains and waited even longer before I went outside. I didn't find footprints near the truck, but it was icy and the snow had turned to hard ice. But across the road, I saw a couple of places on the mountainside where it looked like something had knocked the ice away to the dirt, so it was bare dirt. but I really, honestly, there was nobody around and only a few cars going by now and then, and I really felt vulnerable. And also, weirdly, I felt like I was being watched. So I got on the road to Montana. But I have to give you a little bit further on the story. I have a theory about why he threw the rock, and I don't think it was just to make me leave, and here's why. Remember I first said I heard rustling in the front of the cab? Well, it turns out that at the time all this happened, a rat got into my truck, and I think I heard the rustling in the bag where I put the bones from the wings I ate. And I didn't really discover for sure that he was on the truck for about 3 days. Then I thought it was only a mouse because he was going under the dash to hide about a quarter inch clearance. And I just thought a little mouse was going in and out. And when I finally saw him, it was 8 days later, and he was humongous. He was bigger than my tennis shoe. So my theory is, as cold as it was, I really think that Bigfoot was chasing that rat to eat. And I think he was mad because the rat climbed up under the idling truck and then chewed his way in. And I discovered the hole where he got in. It was in the rubber grommet that covers the gear shift hole that goes from the gear shift down into the engine compartment. And there was a big hole in the back of it. I think he was hungry and he just really wanted to eat that rat. So that's it. Thanks for the opportunity to share, and I hope you can use it. Bye.
Whew. Okay.
Yeah, I like that.
That is some classic stuff. Also love that Bigfoot eats rats.
When it's 0 degrees, you eat whatever you can catch, I guess.
How's he gonna cook that rat? How's he gonna make a fire?
Dude, he's not gonna cook that rat. He's gonna chomp right out of that rat's back. Sounded like it was a big ass rat too. I mean, that's like a, that's yeah, like a foot long Pink's dog.
She said, well, you know, funny you should say that. No, just kidding. Don't sue us, Pink's. Yeah, that rat sounded like it was the size of a shoebox. This story's great for a number of reasons. One, Mickey, what a way to like set the picture. First of all, now I've always had sort of a romantic idea of being a truck driver.
Yeah.
I never want to do it. I'm never fucking driving through weather like this. No, thank you.
Cured that right away, didn't it?
Yeah.
Well, it's actually, go ahead. I'll let you finish.
No. I just want to say also, what's up with these Bigfoot smells? And that's sort of a question for Bryce and you, Derek. But go on, Bryce.
You know, I think for a lot of people, it's just them trying to describe the worst sort of smell they can. And there's you get a lot of wet dog, trash can bin, wet trash. It's like a... It's skunky in a sense, but skunk comes from nature. So we all know what that is. And so they're like, you never get, it's like exactly like a skunk. It's always almost skunk-like. But anyway, yeah, she kind of described it right on the head.
You know, what I thought was crazy about that was she's describing it being five above zero and eventually below zero. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you guys are familiar with you're both from cold areas, I guess. When it's cold like that, you can't smell anything. Like,
right.
It's difficult to, you know, you could put your trash right there and you can't smell that. And even animals don't even notice it sometimes. So this must have been a pretty powerful smell for her to have picked up on it, especially through the truck and those temperatures.
The air for sure. One thing I loved about Mickey is you could tell like she's not one. And this is what goes to what you were saying earlier, Derek, like, you know, you have a pretty good bullshit meter by now. There's, you know, Mickey seems like someone who's not mincing words, not making shit up. She seems like, you know, her story is exactly what her experience was. Did you get that feeling as well, Michael?
Yeah. I mean, that's the first thing that jumped out at me listening to this story was just how grounded it was, you know? Mm-hmm. And this is a perfect example of, now look, a skeptic will say, well, she didn't actually see anything. Right.
So
fair enough. But it shows you how regular folks like you and me like will be like, I know I sound crazy, but here's what I witnessed. Here's what it was. And it defied all logic. And it didn't sound like she was reaching for anything. She's not trying to get attention for this story.
She's working. Fucking truck driver.
And in fact, in a story like this, she's trying to survive the night, you know.
Yep.
You're not thinking about Bigfoot, you know. It was a good enough story to just say, like, I almost drove my truck into an icy river. So I pulled over and my shampoo bottle was freezing. That's a that's a good story. I'm impressed by that. No need to toss a Bigfoot in there. You know what I mean? It's a bit of a hat on a hat. So yeah. It just shows you how, like, it makes it feel more realistic to me, you know?
But she didn't really even throw the Bigfoot in there because, like you said, she didn't see it. She's just guessing that maybe that's what it was. Yep. And that's kind of another testament to maybe this being true. You know, if you're going to make up a story about experiencing a Sasquatch or whatever, you're going to see the creature. You're going to have some sort of risk.
Show the monster in that story. Yeah, you're great point. And the little details, like, it really felt like a horror movie, you know, like details of, like, I didn't want to look through the window because I was afraid that a rock would break the glass and then I would freeze. Yeah. You know, she's still more afraid of the elements than she is the Bigfoot itself. And that's like a mistake a character would have made. Mickey's smart. That's a mistake a character would have made in a horror film. You know what I mean?
I was just immediately thinking of one of my favorite Twilight Zone episodes is when Creature on a Plane, not the original with Shatner, but the one with, oh my God, what's his name?
Lithgow?
Yes, John Lithgow.
The original was with Shatner. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, when he finally decides to open up that window and he just, like, he knows he shouldn't, but he does, and then the creature's right fucking there. I love that episode. But this was like that.
It's creepy stuff, Mickey. I bet as a truck driver, she sees weird stuff all the time.
I wish you would have looked. Damn it, Mickey.
I know.
Next time, look.
Smart.
You know, I asked her, I got to interview her on a Patreon episode. She told the story verbatim again. It was identical. There was no variations. Certainly knows the story front and back. And I asked her about marks on the vehicle. And I believe she said there were some paint scratches where she believed it was hit. You know, there was obvious marks where something was hitting it. But there were no rocks outside or anything like that that she saw. My idea was, possibly the reason she didn't find the rocks was that he wasn't throwing rocks at her, but actually hitting the truck with the rock, trying to scare the rat out. To make noise, you know?
I mean, this might be a little sophomoric of me, but frozen turds, maybe.
How about snowballs? Maybe a snowball fight.
A delightful snowball. That's true.
There you go. It's the perfect crime. The ice melts
really,
and
Michael?
No one knows.
Frozen turds? Like, what? Yeah. Like, he had a cooler of his turds next to him, and he's like,
I'm saying, primates throw scat. Primates,
I was
going to
say, is this
scat.
A primate thing? Are you against primates, Michael?
No, I'm just saying they throw scat. Haven't you ever been
but
to the...
Six frozen
that's
turd?
A stereotype, I believe.
Yeah, that's pre-planning.
Okay, fair enough. All right, everybody. I'm turd.
But when six, that's like pre... That's like, you know, that's well thought.
He's packing. He's loading them up. It's cold out there. You got to throw something. Okay. Let's move on from this. We have one more story. This one, why don't you set it up for us? I'm excited about this one. Okay, here we go.
Sure. This one is wild. It's a call I never in a million years thought I would get. And I actually threw this one in there because of your bullshit and believe it game. But I didn't realize I was playing the Halloween rules, so we didn't get to talk about it. But this one's an anonymous call out of Texas. And like I said, this one, you're never going to believe what this creature is.
Okay.
Hi, Derek. I'd like to stay anonymous on this call because honestly, I'm not sure if I even believe myself, but I figured it was worth giving you guys a call and seeing if any of your listeners have had experiences such as this. But it's in Texas, and back in 2013, actually, during the summer, nice clear day, I was out fishing with a couple guys, and in the Texas Gulf, if anybody's an avid fisherman there, they know to go to the deep well or the deep water oil rigs and fish kind of right around those oil rigs, because usually red snapper and other fish are stacked right there. And if you avoid the pipes with all the barnacles and stuff on it, it's usually a pretty good place to go fishing and catch great fish. Anyhow, we were out fishing that day, and it was probably towards the afternoon. We had quite a good catch, good haul coming through. We did have several of our lines getting cut. And I don't know if you're familiar with fishing too much or not, but, you know, if you get a snag and you try to pull pull that snag and get it loose, you know, you'll see that tension on the line where it snapped. It'll either be curled up or it'll be thinned out or whatever. But if you, you know, get like a cut, like an actual cut, it's usually a really clean, just cut through the fishing line. Well, we're getting those, and we weren't, and we know we weren't anywhere near the pilings or any kind of pipe because we can see it on our depth finder. So we were just kind of curious as to what maybe what was cutting our line, and we thought maybe it was like a barracuda or a little shark or something like that down there grabbing our fish as we would hang them and try to pull them up. But it happened several times. I mean, each of us had several instances where our line would just seem to be cut. Anyhow, like I said, it was towards the end of the day, and we were fishing, and I decided to take a break, give me some water and just some snacks and stuff like that. You definitely don't want to be drinking too heavily that far out, because we were probably 13 miles from the shore. If you drink too much, good luck getting back, especially with the seas. This day, the sea was very, very clear, very calm. Those of you who haven't been out that far fishing, typically you can see like 50, 60 feet down. You know, you can see activity down there. You know, I mean, you may not be able to spot exact outline of a fish or whatever, but you're able to see them. And that's how this was. It was kind of a normal day, nice and clear. We were fishing, and like I said, I took a break and started just kind of gazing, you know, looking at the water and just kind of gazing off a little bit. And a sea turtle caught my eye, and I thought it was really awesome. You know, I don't see many sea turtles out when I've been fishing, but the sea turtle caught my eye, and it was a big one. The shell was probably 4 foot by 5 foot, something like that. It was just kind of cruising slow, you know, about 10 feet underneath the surface, just kind of coming towards our boat. Then at about, it came within probably 10 feet from the boat or so, and I was kind of the only one on that side of the boat. I was on the port side, and the fish, I was watching it because I was like, man, this is kind of cool. It's coming up to about that 5-6 foot depth range. And I was watching it, and all of a sudden it just seemed to turn over, you know, it just where the top of the shell was now facing down and the bottom of the shell was facing up. And, you know, sea turtle, I mean, it had that kind of cream color to the shell. Anyway, I was watching it, and I was like, I wonder why it's turning over. And I kid you not, man, all of a sudden it just started to, the only way I can say it is it started to transform, I guess, and it elongated. It seemed like it elongated out. And this is why I wanted to stay anonymous, because it sounds crazy. It just seemed that it turned into a mermaid. And, you know, I was like, what? The face was looking up at me, and it was, like I said, about 6 to 8 feet below the surface of the water, and you can see the back half of the tail, or the fish part, as you can say. It started up higher than what, you know, you typically see in movies. Like it was like above the belly button area, you know, is where it started, like right below the breasts, I guess you could say. It started there. It was kind of just that greenish, grayish silver, you know, color that you see, of course, a little bit lighter on the bottom, like normal fish is. But going up, like, you couldn't tell if it was male or female. You know, you definitely see, you know, like I said, you see a chest, but you don't know if it's male or female. And then it definitely had arms. Now, the arms were kind of odd. They didn't really have shoulders. It kind of was at an angle, I guess, on both sides. Kind of, it went almost like it didn't have, well, no, it had a neck, but almost, I don't know, it just, that transition is weird. But it had arms, long arms, and the face, man, the face was just, you know, cause like I said, it was about 10 foot down. It was clear, so I could see a lot, you know, I could see it pretty vividly. The face was just kind of a, I want to say like a bluish-green color. I mean, it was kind of that coloration, and it was just odd. Actually, later on, whenever I was at home, you know, just a couple months later, whenever it was, my wife was watching Harry Potter, and I think it was one of the latter films of Harry Potter, and they had the bad wizard, the the bad wizard. The face of that wizard looked almost identical to this face. I mean, it stopped me in my tracks whenever I was kind of walking by and glancing over the TV. I was just like, that's it. That's what it is. You had little slits in the nose. You had just this weird reptilian face, and it was very odd, very, very odd. And then the hair was kind of a dark, matted type of hair. It was just very odd, very, very odd. And Anyway, had something in his hand, but I couldn't really see it. But anyway, this all took from the transformation period to me seeing it. It took about maybe, I don't know, 45 seconds. And then all of a sudden, as soon as I saw, you know, it was just as soon as I really got to see the face and head, it kind of just bent backwards and just went straight down, into the depths. I was sitting there, like I said, I didn't believe what I was seeing. I didn't know what to think. Just odd, just very odd. But then I started thinking, you know, again, this was after we got on shore. I didn't say anything to anybody because I didn't want to be looked at, you know, because like I said, I didn't even know if I believed myself. You know, it could just be the water playing tricks on me, whatever. But a couple days later or whenever it was, I got thinking, I was like, you know, that's probably why our lines were getting cut, is what if this mermaid creature was down there and it had something sharp and it was cutting our line. And, you know, and maybe it just was trying to see what dumb people were, you know, providing them a free meal or something. I don't know. But like I said, I don't know. I've wondered many times if I was just, my eyes are playing tricks on me. But I figured I'd share just to see if anybody else has had an experience like that. Anyway, man, that's kind of the story. I hope everything's good and look forward to continuing to listen to your podcast. All right, bud.
Well, there you go. Mermaids.
Bullshit or believe it.
Believe it.
You have to now, right?
Fuck. Are we not sure this just wasn't maybe a turtle with nipples? I mean, is it possible? Because Voldemort doesn't look that different from a turtle. If you just look
at
their faces.
Yeah, right.
That's a good
point.
Like, I can see
a turtle's head upside down, sort of looking like Voldemort's head. Right.
Yeah, I mean, he's supposed to be reptilian. Maybe this was just a turtle. Maybe
but
it was just
boobs.
A turtle.
He saw those mermaid boobs, man.
Actually, he said there was a chest and wasn't male or female.
He couldn't tell. He couldn't discern whether it was male or female.
I don't know. Derek, you got to explain this one because
I wish I
weird
could.
Turtle is maybe where I'm going with this.
Well, you know, on my show, like I said, I'm a hopeful skeptic. So if I see some sort of logical explanation for any of these stories, I'm going to say what it is. I'm not going to claim that's what happened. I'm just going to say that's something a little more logical than a creature, you know, that may be the reason that you experienced this thing. And I racked my brain. I talked to a marine biologist friend of mine, and we kind of came up with this idea of a blanket octopus. Mm. You know, essentially, it's just an octopus that actually lives in that area and is often filmed around these oil wells. Oh. And it's like a 6-foot long octopus, but it's got webbing in between several of its tentacles. So it just looks like it's wearing a cloak, and it's a long flowing cloak. And of course, it's an octopus, so it's a master of camouflage. I can change shape, texture, color, size.
Yeah, dude. Yep.
And it's got patterns that might look like a shell. You know what I mean? If you're just looking at it. Oh, dude.
Well, my first thought was, it was mimicking. Google blanket octopus and get a look at these things.
This thing is, by the way, fucking awesome.
Oh,
this is like better than a mermaid.
They're beautiful. But my thought was maybe it was mimicking a turtle, right? So he thought he saw a turtle, and this creature, or this, octopus was just mimicking this known animal for protection. I'm sure turtles are safer. It's safer to be a turtle than to be an octopus in the open ocean. Then I don't know why it would turn into a human. Like, I could see it mimicking a human. Maybe it saw a human swimming or something like that. But that's a lot of grabbing at straws to explain.
Yeah, but if you look at some of these blanket octopus photos, and listeners, if you're in a place to do this, I would do this. They almost look like they have they're about the length. They almost look like they have arms and they're wearing like a skirt. First of all, I did not know this fucking animal existed, and now maybe it's my new favorite animal.
Yeah,
this thing is,
I know,
bad fucking ass. There's one here that looks like it kind of looks like Starro from Suicide Squad. I'm into this. I think we have our culprit, I'm going to say.
Yeah, but, you know, and look, after seeing my octopus teacher, I like, it's incredible what these creatures can do. And I'm not going to say it's not a blanket octopus, but how would you explain the cutting of the fishing line? Like, these These guys sound like, you know, they fished quite a bit and something was cutting the line, you know?
Well, the blanket in the octopus's little pockets. And it turns out this one just happened to be a tailor. He's got some little clippers in there, little scissors. And he goes snip, 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 snip. And he cuts those lines. Yeah, no, I don't know. Look, it's weird. But I gotta, like, if you're telling me these creatures exist, and look at every photo of this, it looks slightly different in every picture. I'm saying it's more likely it's this. And
so you're not going to go with shape-shifting mermaid.
I'm not, because if I saw this, I would go to mermaid before I would go to blanket octopus, because I don't know this thing fucking exists.
With knife sharp claws. You know where I am. Shape shifting mermaid, knife sharp claws.
Well, to kind of answer Bryce a little bit, they do have, all octopi have a beak, and it's kind of centrally located.
Oh,
and it looks
yeah.
like a parrot's beak. You know, it's a really right. sharp. You can get bit by an octopus. And I can just imagine them, you know, maybe they have herring or something on the line on a hook. The octopus comes by and engulfs that, and it can't get it, obviously, because it's lined. So it just cuts the line and takes off with the goods. You know, oh, that
now,
could explain it. That doesn't mean that's what it is.
Its mouth, too, it's going to get a fissure.
Oh, yeah. It's pissed.
I've swallowed a piece of sharp glass. It's not fun.
Wait, what?
Oh, sorry. I'm getting off track here.
No. Tell that story, please.
No,
yeah, I'm intrigued as well.
No,
you still
Bryce,
have the glass
have
is what I want
to
know.
Google anal fissure.
wait.
Not on a work computer.
I wanted to know how you swallowed the glass and you went to anal fissure.
Well, because when you swallow the glass, it's got to come out, right?
Why were you swallowing glass, though? How did glass get in your mouth?
Look, I did a lot of stupid shit when I was drunk, okay? I don't know.
Is this a Club Bryce story?
I don't know when it was a story, but
did you break a glass while you were drinking, or did someone bet you to eat
glass? I think I broke a glass while I was drinking.
This story is highly suspect.
At least it was accidental.
This is suspect, Bryson. We're going to get into this over on the other side at some point, because this
that's
great. I'm
that's
not
just
satisfied.
What I want to talk about. Right.
This is not.
It sounds like a full episode. Strangest things you've swallowed, and you can just have guests on, and they can all share the strangest thing.
Well, I guess I'm feeling sorry for that blanket octopus who swallowed the hook and line from the herring.
Hmm. All right. Anyway. I need to know more about this off camera, off mic.
Wow.
Derek Hayes. Amazing stories that you shared with
us,
both from your show and your experiences. Where can people find Monsters Among Us?
You can find Monsters Among Us anywhere you can find a podcast, essentially. We release a new episode every Thursday, and we're in our 12th season now, so we've been around for quite a while. And if you have a story you'd like to share, hopefully you guys don't mind me doing this, but I have a hotline. It's 1-888-608-NIGHT. If you have a story, call in and share it with us.
We tried a
N-I-T-E?
N-I-G-H-T.
Yeah, oh, N-I-G-H-T. Oh, right, right. Oh, I didn't.
604. It's 888-6. Now I can't do it on cue. 888-608-6444 is the numerical number of it.
Got it.
Listen, listeners, if you call this guy before you write into us, you are dead to us. Okay, that's all I'm gonna say. It's okay that he did that, but you are dead to us.
Hey, no, we have a Gmail. He's got a hotline. Of course, you want to go to the hotline.
We tried a hotline and it never worked. So you can email us. By the way, guys, record a voicemail and email us the voice memos.
Listen, Derek, we're big fans of what you do. You do a great job.
Likewise,
I love
guys.
You on Paranormal Caught on Camera, and a fan of the podcast as well. So keep up the great. And I know you got some good stuff coming down the pike as well. So
definitely be on the lookout
for that.
And where can people
come back and talk about that?
Your social media, Derek.
Oh boy, that's not my department. Just search for Monsters Among Us podcast.
Great,
my wife Sarah takes care of all that, and she's got it nailed down. So you search for it, you'll find it.
We'll tag you in all the Instagram stuff. People can find you there. Guys, not much to plug from me. Just follow me at McMills on Instagram and Twitter. Fine. Sure. I never tweet anymore at all. Find me over at Instagram. I'm throwing up pictures of Violet and Zola. I'm in puppy heaven right now. I'm having a great time over there.
Yeah,
Bryce,
she's a
where
cutie.
Can people find you?
You can find me on Instagram and Twitter, where I do most of my business. I'm on Instagram at Mr. Bryce Johnson and Twitter at Bryce O. Johnson.
And then, hey, the secret account at EatsGlass2001 for all
your anal fissure videos. Go check out Derek's stuff and go get yourself a Tyler Bentz perennial zombie Bigfoot black hoodie. Mwah, chef's kiss.
Yeah, it's one of our favorites. All right. Thanks again to Derek Hayes. Thank you to listening. Good stuff coming up this month. Until next time, good night.
And go get regressed. Bigfoot Collectors Club is produced by Riley Bray. Our theme song is Come Alone by Sun Eaters, courtesy of Lotus Pool Records. If you like the show, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. It really helps get the podcast to more listeners. To support the show, check out our Patreon page at patreon.com/Bigfoot Collectors Club and unlock multiple reward episodes every month.
Hey, this is Eric Molinsky, host of the podcast Imaginary Worlds. Each episode, I explore different sci-fi fantasy genres, talking with filmmakers, novelists, game designers, cosplayers, comic book artists, and anyone who works in the field of make-believe. I also look at the fan experience, asking, why do we suspend our disbelief? You can subscribe to Imaginary Worlds wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey guys, Heather Ashley here, host of the Big Mad True Crime Podcast. If you're looking for a true crime podcast with all of the details and none of the small talk, you have found your people. Each week, we dive deep into a new case and learn everything there is to know, from getting to know the victim and the impact their case has had on those around them, to the investigation into what happened to them and who is or might be responsible. And if the bad guy looks like he might drink whiskey by a dumpster or has the social skills of an ogre, we say it because we were all thinking it anyway. As the name suggests, we get big mad over true crime, and I would love to have you join our incredible community of listeners with big hearts and zero time for small talk. Subscribe to Big Mad True Crime anywhere you listen to podcasts and listen to new episodes every single Monday.